This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 28, where we review the latest film in our 1982 series of reviews, The Beastmaster. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selection there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. So just right off, we do want to apologize. We did take a couple weeks off from the podcast.
We did.
And you might also notice I sound maybe a little more nasally than normal.
You definitely sound more nasally.
I had endoscopic sinus surgery and a septum deviation repair. And yeah, that was a very painful ordeal.
Yeah, he's been sitting around with his head wrapped in ice for 2 weeks. So we weren't really in podcasting mode, were you?
No, not at all. I thought, man, this is going to be great. You know, I'll be able to watch all these movies because I'll be, you know, I'm going to take a week off from work. And I've just kind of had in my mind that, yeah, I may have some blood and some nastiness come out of my nose, but I'll be able to watch some movies. And I really, like, I just couldn't enjoy anything.
Nope. Well, and that really goes against your normal philosophy of, like, if you don't feel good, you might as well get something done.
Right.
Jeff is legitimately the busiest sick person I've ever met in my life. Like, when he's stuck at home because he's not feeling well, he, like, takes on a house project or something crazy. But this one really set him on his keister for a bit.
Yeah, and it's just been terrible. Like, you know how anytime you have, say, just any kind of sinus infection, you can't sleep well. You know, you're propped up at night, just trying your best. Well, that's basically been me for 2 weeks straight.
Yes.
I would say, what I've been telling people at work, I feel like I'm getting better like 5% every day.
Okay.
So it's not as fast as I would like, but I am heading in the right direction.
You're going in the right direction. We'll get there.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, what have we been watching lately?
Oh, well, I mean, you did have some downtime, so we did watch some stuff. Of course, we watched the movie that we will be reviewing today, Beastmaster. But
that's
I think for a little, I don't know, a little background work, we decided to watch. Was Sheena a follow-up film to Beastmaster?
So it came 2 years later, and it stars Tanya Roberts, who is our female lead in The Beastmaster.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with The Beastmaster. But it's weird because her outfit kind of looks like the same outfit she wears in Beastmaster.
And it's got the same vibe. It's this whole, like, you know, human that's tribal that can talk and communicate with animals somehow.
Right.
There's some sort of power there.
Yeah.
So it's like the female version of Beastmaster, sort of.
It is kind of, yeah. But think of it as like in modern days, like modern days as in 1980s. And she's like in Africa.
Right.
So it's like this primitive type environment that she comes from. But then it's clashing with, you know, greedy men who want to exploit their land. And
yeah, I got to tell you, I like Beastmaster a lot more than I like Sheena. That's for sure.
The Beastmaster was Citizen Kane compared to Sheena.
Well, that might be a stretch. But yeah, Sheena was a rough watch. There's a little bit, no, not a little. There's a lot of like white savior complex going on in Sheena because she's like this blonde white girl that's being raised in Africa and is going to save them all.
Right.
Save this tribe, you know, according to some tribal prophecy.
Right.
And there's a lot of gratuitous nudity. Like you get a little bit of that in The Beastmaster, which we'll hit on later, but this was just like, whoa, over the top. So we're not recommending this to go watch with your family. Do not watch this with your family.
No, it's not a family film. And it's just not very good either.
No, I think they were trying to make up for the lack of story with some
boobs.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's where they went.
Well, something that we have watched recently, and we always say this, we're a little late to the game.
We're always late to the game on what everybody else is watching.
Yes.
That's all right.
Well, we hadn't sprung for Apple TV until I got a new iPhone, and with it came 3-month subscription to Apple TV. And guess what's on Apple TV that all of you have probably already seen? Ted Lasso. We've been loving it. We're a season and a half in.
Yeah.
I think we have about 5 episodes left to go.
Okay, of season 2?
Yep, season 2.
That sounds right. Yeah. Again, don't sit down and watch it with your family. There's lots of language and some inappropriate joking, but it really is hilarious.
It's funny. It's a feel-good show, too.
Yeah. I never knew I liked Jason Sudeikis so much.
Yeah.
Like, he's fantastic in this.
Yeah, he really is perfect for this. And in season one, there's all this tension and, you know, struggles and difficulties. And through that adversity, you really get to know the characters mm-hmm. and really become close to them. You really get to care about just about every character.
Yeah, literally almost every character you have some sort of attachment to.
Yeah. Now, again, we haven't finished season two. Season two, I feel like they've pumped the brakes on a lot of the tension and
it's
stress.
It's lost its edge, yeah.
But, you know, you don't really care too much because you enjoy the characters.
Yeah, now you're in love with the characters, so who cares about the edginess?
Yeah. But yeah, that's been a good time.
Yeah, that's fun.
So like we mentioned, we watched The Beastmaster for this review. It's our latest in our 1982 series, which I think we're going to take a little break from after this week
okay.
and come back to. You know, obviously there's a lot of films from 1982 we haven't seen yet. Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, yeah.
Blade Runner. Star Trek II. I mean, there's a whole bunch of like really biggies out
there.
It was
a big year. All right. So today we're talking about Beastmaster. This is from 1982. This is your spoiler warning. If you have not yet watched The Beastmaster, hit pause. Go see it. Come back and join us later. It's a PG movie. It's a family hang. You can watch this with the whole family. There's a little bit of female frontal nudity in there, but for the most part, it's a pretty clean movie. So I'm going to read you a synopsis from Google Play because I felt like this really summed up nicely what happens in this movie. So it says, in an unknown era, a fantastic ancient time of bird warriors, witches, and barbarian hordes, evil priests rule society. But one young hero with the supernatural ability to communicate with animals dares to rebel against tyranny, the Beastmaster. Ripped from his mother's womb by the evil priest Mayax, played by Rip Torn, Dar, played by Mark Singer, survives the human sacrifice that Mayax intends and grows into a fearsome warrior bent on revenging the murder of his parents. Now, with the help of a beautiful slave girl, Kiri, played by Tanya Roberts, and his animal friends, a huge black panther, bears, an eagle, and ferrets Kodo and Podo, Dar takes the battle to the Mayax and his barbarian minions.
Google got something wrong there, though, because it said panther.
Well,
it was actually a tiger that they painted black.
But it is all black in the movie. So I think were panthers not available?
I don't know.
Rented a tiger and painted it black.
Tigers are like bigger than panthers, too, aren't they?
Considerably.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty massive. I did read a little, and I don't know, this seems to be hotly debated on the interwebs.
Right.
That maybe that tiger died shortly after the movie because they painted him black and there was some sort of allergic reaction. I don't know. I read different accounts where that did happen or where that was actually like a bad rumor.
Right.
Either way, don't paint your tigers. Like,
yeah.
Why couldn't it have just been a tiger?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, get a black panther.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe panthers are really secretive and you can't catch them.
Maybe.
I have no idea.
Well, so we reviewed Jason and the Argonauts last year.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of that movie was very similar to The Beastmaster. So both films have someone who sees into the future and tells our main bad guy that, hey, you're going to die at the hands of this person who's a little kid right now.
Right.
So both bad guys have the same idea, right? Like, well, I'll just kill the kid.
Isn't this very much like King Herod from the Bible? Like the wise men are like, you know, Jesus is coming to overthrow you. So he's like, kill all the babies then.
Yeah, yeah. Same idea. Right?
I also think it's very Macbethian, right?
Yeah.
The witches warn him.
Yeah. And that's exactly it for this too. You know, he's got like these three witches.
That's right.
You know, our baddie, Mayax, he's got these three witches who... Like from far away, they look like hot young girls, and then they zoom in.
Their faces are horrific.
Faces are so awful, nasty.
Yes.
It was a bait and switch.
They're very uncomely faces.
But anyway, so, you know, in both movies, obviously that foretold future actually does happen regardless of what our bad guys try to do.
That's right. You can't stop the beat.
Fate. Yeah.
Fate. That's where I was going with that.
So a few things about this film before we kind of dive in. So this movie had a budget of $9 million and the box office take was $14.1 million.
Eee, that's not huge, huh?
It's not huge. So again, it's like a lot of the movies we do. It gained a huge cult following afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Because it had extensive TV exposure. They played it on TBS, TNT, and HBO over and over and over again.
Yes.
And so
I remember.
Yeah, like that's where we saw it, right? Like exactly. I didn't have HBO, but we had TBS, TNT.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I guarantee I saw this movie a bunch as a kid.
Oh, I did too. Yeah. My dad really enjoyed Beastmaster, so it was one of those. I saw a lot.
Yeah.
If it was on TV on a Saturday afternoon, we were probably watching it.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was like a lower budget Conan, right? Because Conan came out the same year. It was made for $20 million and returned $70
million.
Oh,
wow.
A much bigger hit, obviously, but also a lot more money. And,
yeah.
It was directed by a guy named Don Coscarelli, and he did the Phantasm series.
Oh, okay.
I know you haven't seen.
I have not. I've heard you talk about it a lot, though.
That first Phantasm movie, he basically did on the weekends and nights. He rented. He basically did the whole movie himself.
Oh, wow.
You know, coordinating everything. So I always liked those kind of stories, you know, like right. We talked about Ed Wood and these guys that like do it all.
Yeah. All themselves.
All themselves. They just, despite all odds, they just make something happen. And unlike
Ed Wood.
That's
why you like Prince as a music artist,
yes,
right?
Hey,
he does
thing.
It all.
He does it all.
Or did it all. Yes.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So when I watched Beastmaster, and I know you don't have a reference for this, but there were a lot of sound effects and like stylistic elements to this movie that I was like, okay, I could see the guy that did Phantasm doing this movie now.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so you and I have both seen this several times, mm-hmm. and we watched it with our kids maybe a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and then we said, hey, why don't we just go ahead and do this film?
Since it fits with our nice 1982 niche we have going right now.
yeah, exactly. So why don't we jump into standouts and setbacks?
All right. Okay, I'll get us started, actually, because the thing that I love the most about this movie as a kid were the beast. So the beast, to me, not the Beastmaster, but his beast, were what stood out to me. Because, I don't know, maybe it's every little kid or at least every little girl, especially, you know, I grew up kind of semi-rural. You just love animals. And the thought that someone could have the ability to communicate with animals telepathically or even verbally.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that's all I would have wanted as a kid, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Just to be able to walk outside and Snow White that stuff, you know? Like, talk to animals. They show up out of nowhere. They're my friends. They're my allies. Yeah. So Beastmaster gets to do that. So I always thought that was pretty amazing. So we have Kodo and Podo, which mm-hmm. I will say the naming in this movie... I don't know. It could have been a little more creative, but whatever.
Yeah.
So Kodo and Podo are ferrets, which I always thought were cool as a kid. Now as an adult, I know that they always smell like pee. I'm not interested in having a ferret as a pet. But as a kid, they're so cute and so funny. So Kodo and Podo are like his buddies that ride around in his leather satchel and steal stuff, right? They're little thieves, basically, are what they are. So they're fun.
They get into trouble as much as they help them, too.
Yeah, that's true. They're kind of like mischievous little rascals, right?
And also, when they die at the end, or one of
just
them dies.
Just one of them dies. I can't remember if
like
it's
sacrifices
Podo or
Podo. His life.
I want to say it's Podo.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. I remember that being like gut-wrenching,
heartbreak
as a
kid.
It's
like, no, you lost a ferret. It's terrible. Yeah. So you do kind of learn to love the little ferrets, and then when you lose one, it's sad.
Yeah.
But we already mentioned we have a black tiger, which isn't a thing. It's actually a tiger they painted black. I think his name was Ruh. Yeah. Obviously, you're real cool if you walk around and can call on your tiger to show up at any moment.
Yeah.
Or black jungle cat. I don't know what they wanted us to believe he was. He's clearly a tiger, and you can even see in some parts of the movie, like you can see his striping showing through the black paint.
Yeah.
Anytime I think he drooled or something, it would mm-hmm. wipe off around his face. he has a bird, Chirac.
Yeah.
I think it's an eagle of some sort. Not a bald eagle, but it's an eagle or a hawk.
I saw something called, he was a golden eagle, but I'm not really sure.
Okay, maybe a golden eagle. I'm not really sure. But, you know, That's really cool. If you can call on your eagle friend to show up. So we get lots of aerial shots because it's like he can see through the eyes of the eagle.
Yeah.
Well, it's really like he can see through the eyes of any of his animal friends, right?
If yeah.
they're off spying on somebody, he can kind of see through their eyes, which...
Yeah, he explains it in the movie that he can see through their eyes and they can see through his eyes.
Right.
And he knows their thoughts and they know his thoughts.
That's like multitasking at its best, right?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing. There's a cow even that gets to do a little acting in this movie, which is pretty hilarious. What I love about this is the very beginning of the movie, Beastmaster's Dar is his name. He's gonna, like, he's unborn. He's in the queen's belly, right? And the king and queen are asleep. And the evil priest's henchmen or hench ladies, yeah. witches, are going to sneak in and steal this baby out of its mother's womb
yeah.
by putting it, like doing some sort of magic and making it transfer from the mom's womb into this cow.
Right.
So they're real sneaky. She sneaks into their bedroom with an entire heifer cow. Like,
yeah.
How sneaky can you be with a cow?
Yeah. In like a palace, going to the king and queen's bedroom. And they sneak a humongous cow in there.
Yeah, I mean, cows are kind of always making noise, especially if you're making the move. They don't like to be yeah. told what to do, kind of grunting and moaning.
No.
And, oh, my gosh. I think it's hilarious that you can sneak, I'm doing air quotes that no one can see, sneak a cow into someone's bedroom in the middle of the night, and they don't wake up.
No, the cow's silent, and they do all these zoom shots on the cow's face, too. And I was just thinking, like, wow, this cow's doing a pretty good job of looking like... You know, like, what the heck's going on? A baby's coming into my belly right now.
Right. So there's some weird magical transfer of the baby from the mother's womb into the cow's womb. And the yeah. cow's face is a little like, wait, what's happening now? Yeah, yeah, that cow should have won an Oscar.
Yeah, definitely.
And then there's a life-saving dog. Of course, every good animal movie has to have a good dog. And his name is Toto.
That's so not confusing.
Kodo, Podo, and Toto. So, yeah. I don't know who's in charge of naming on this movie, but they maybe should have picked yeah. a different job.
And really, Toto? I mean, that's right. a little close to...
Toto!
What's that?
Toto from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
isn't that the dog's name?
Yeah, yeah.
This is T-O-D-O, I think.
Instead of T-O-T-O.
Right, exactly. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so he saves our main character, Dar, from a battle, despite having been shot with an arrow. Like, early on, before Dar really knows who he is and has really come into his powers.
Yeah.
This is, like, his best friend, the dog.
Right.
And the dog has been, you know, hit with an arrow in battle and still manages to save Dar's life. So, he's a hero. And even, there's a bear at the very beginning of the movie, before yeah. Dar knows who he is. A bear comes in to attack a fellow villager,
mm-hmm.
and Dar kind of basically talks him away. Like, he still yeah. killed the villager, I think. He didn't rescue the villager guy.
Right.
But he did scare off the bear and kept it from eating himself and his dad.
Yeah.
So, or his adoptive dad.
Yeah. And like you said, that's when we realize that he has this power.
That's right, right?
And his dad tells him basically after that, you know, don't tell anybody about this day.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's worried about...
People know you can, like, talk to him. Yeah, was he worried about exploitation?
Scientist coming in on a helicopter and taking off his son.
Yeah, hauling him off to some sort of lab.
Do some experiments.
This is kind of like Bronze Age, prehistoric even. So I don't know that scientists are going to swoop in. I don't think science was a thing.
But they might burn him at a stake or something.
They would probably burn him at the stake.
Yeah.
Yes. Or, I don't know, make him go live with the bad priest Mayax because he's cool with
right.
weird stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, the beasts kind of steal the show in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm sure behind the scenes, the animals were all a nightmare to have to deal with and to do all the things that you want them to do.
Yeah.
But in the movie, they are a huge part of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works.
Well, honestly, they're better actors than the actors in the movie. So.
Yeah. Well, with one exception.
Oh, that's true.
So I want to call out Rip Torn, our mm-hmm. eccentric baddie who plays Mayax. One thing that's cool, he definitely shows that he's evil, right? Right away,
yeah.
he gets these two henchmen that are there next to him, and he just kind of gives a nod, and they both hang themselves right there in front of the king.
Yeah.
He teams up with these three nasty witches that we talked about before. He orders the death of this unborn child, Dar, which is pretty cold-blooded, in my opinion, right?
Yeah.
You see him later on... like, has a little boy above his head and throws the kid into the fire and kills the kid.
Yeah, he's perfectly okay with child sacrifice. So yeah. He is a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, obviously he tries to kill another child, which the golden eagle that you talked about, Sherak, saves that kid.
Swoops in and saves the kid.
And then, you know, near the end of the movie, he kills the blind old King Zed. He plays things straight, right?
Right.
But he has this kind of creepy grin on his face. Like, there's just something behind that.
Well,
like,
if you've seen Rip Torn in anything else, he always has that kind of smirk. Yeah. Right?
He's got a smirk.
So even though he's, like, completely evil and nasty, he's got this funny smirk. And you're like, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you see a lot of these movies that are low budget, the bad guy is like, all right, I'm going to do all the bad things. I'm going to be one dimensional and I'm going to have a maniacal laugh, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any of that. Like, you see, he's all bad, but you can kind of see like there's this sadistic side. Like he's getting some pleasure out of this.
Right.
But he's cunning. Like he's all about power. And there's actually a few moments that are pretty funny. Like when the Golden Eagle flies down and saves the kid. You know, he's got to figure out something real quick in front of all these people. Right. And he's like, you see, you know, the god, which I think is called R, which is very confusing.
Yeah, everything's like one or two syllables in this movie.
He said, you know, R wants your children.
Yeah.
You know, he acts like this meant to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, no, we planned this. We knew R was coming to swoop this kid up.
Yeah. So he has a peculiar smile, a different way of delivering lines, like the cadence in which he speaks. And then he's just a very unique performance, which I think is awesome. Like, you know, in a lesser actor's hands, they would, if they deliver these lines, I think it could be wooden.
Sure.
You know, the dialogue itself wasn't spectacular.
No, right? No.
So I think he really added some life to the role. And, you know, I just love Rip Torn. I mean, I'm going to put a plug in for a different movie. One of my favorite of all time.
What's that?
Defending Your Life.
I knew you were going to say Defending Your Life.
Like, I love the actor, Albert Brooks. And he's another one of these guys that does everything himself. He writes and directs and produces these movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comedian. Albert Brooks, look up some of his films. But Defending Your Life is probably my favorite of his.
Yeah.
And Rip Torn plays a lawyer type character.
And he's kind of the baddie of that movie, but not in a sadistic way. Like,
yeah. He's not really a baddie. He's, I think he's really lovable. There's just something about him. Yeah, he's got some not great traits about him.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something engaging. Like, yeah, you're really drawn in into his character big time. Another standout I'll throw out is really to Lee Holdridge for the soundtrack.
Okay.
It has this epic, majestic theme that goes on, like these big, lush orchestral arrangements. You know, a lot of these sword and sandal flicks, especially in the 80s after this movie and Conan the Barbarian, they have some pretty lousy music, right?
Right.
And one of the telltale signs is if you hear like a synthesizer score, you know, let's face it, unless you're John Carpenter, the synthesizer scores in the 80s were terrible.
Yeah, they were.
And, you know, they're kind of a telltale sign that this movie's not going to be good.
Right. We've talked about that. I think in last season, you know, if you want your movie to be more timeless, you've got to employ some real musicians in the theme music. And if you just go all synth or you use all period music right from wherever you're setting your movie,
right,
it's not going to hold up well.
No. I think we said something similar about Red Sonja last year. Mm-hmm. Like they had a really good score too, you know, big orchestra and band instruments.
Right.
And it makes it more timeless.
It does, and it keeps it from feeling so low budget.
Yeah, yeah. And one more standout I'll throw out there. Something that was super memorable about this movie is their ally that this guy has, these bird people.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the bird people.
And they eat humans. They have these, like, wings that they wrap around the person.
They're real gross looking.
And it's just like, you know, the person's, like, fighting, or they're doing something to consume the flesh.
Well, they wrap them up in their giant wings. And then, yeah, somehow they absorb the humans. Like, you don't see them eating with a mouse. But then once they've wrapped their wings around a human, the human does not exist anymore.
No. You just see some green goo. And then if they have metal or armor and clothes, all that's left with the green goo when they open up their wings.
Yes.
But, you know, they're not even the bad guy.
No.
But they're super memorable. Like, oh my gosh, you know. Mm-hmm. I think this movie should get a standout for having a very unique type of animal or character. Uh-huh. Like, they're kind of bird people, you know. But they're not just like, hey, we fly around. You know what I mean? Not like Hawkman.
Yeah, they're different. They're different than anything I've seen. I will say, though, they're a little Tolkien-esque because they do come in at the end and basically help in the final battle.
Right.
Like, all the good guys would have been slaughtered by the Juns, the Duns. I don't remember who the bad guys are that come in at the
Juns,
end.
I think.
But the bird people come in and help. It's very Hobbit-like, you know, where the eagles come in and help out in the final Battle of the Five Armies or whatever it is at the end of The Hobbit. I'm not saying that the writer of this script was a Tolkien fan, but maybe he was because it felt a little, you know.
He could have been. The big difference there in the Tolkien, like, they're kind of traditional eagles, right?
Right. Big eagles. Absolutely just giant eagles that are very stately and, you know,
these guys
honorable.
Kinda have like
these guys are a little seedy and gross.
They kind of have like a bat look to them too.
Yeah, they look like bats, like human bats.
Yeah.
Which is a horrifying thing. Not like Batman.
No.
Totally different.
It's not our bats
this
we're talking
like
about.
This is like a biological experiment gone wrong. That's what these bat people are.
Yeah.
They're not crime-fighting, you know, millionaires.
Yeah. They're definitely gross. A good person to have on your side, though, right?
Yeah. You don't want to be their enemy, that's for sure.
No. And there's a really good scene where you're introduced to them. Like, they eat one of their people they've captured. And, you know, they're going to eat our good guy here. Mark Singer's character.
Dar is going to get eaten by the bat people.
But they worship winged animals.
Dar calls in his golden eagle friend.
He comes and lands on his arm. They're like, whoa, we need to watch out for him or respect him.
He's
or
like,
whatever.
Well, we can't eat him. He's friends with the winged creatures.
Yeah. And they kind of give him an IOU token or something.
Yeah, they did. They gave him a little, I don't know, like a bat signal.
Yeah. And that comes in handy. Like you said, later on in the movie, right before our final battle, he gives it to the bird. The bird takes it to him. And they show up in the 11th hour and really help save the day.
Do the bat people have a name in this movie? I don't even think they speak, do they? They have zero lines.
Talk.
They're silent. They're just creepy and gross.
Yeah. Yeah. But they work.
Yeah. They do work for sure.
So now let's talk about setbacks for the film.
All right.
Yeah. The first one I will mention is some of the fight scenes are a little clunky, clearly choreographed. It's kind of like I'm hitting you with a sword. Now I'm waiting for you to swing around and hit me. So I just stand in place.
Which all fight scenes are choreographed, but when it's like you're seeing the puppet strings, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I did my move. No, you do your move.
Right, right.
Okay, no, I'll do my move.
It definitely could have used a little more TLC on some of those scenes. But, you know, I don't know if I'm nitpicking there. Like there's some really cool scenes where, like, these guys are coming out of fire. You know, there's fire all around them. Mm-hmm. And there's no CGI or anything like that.
No,
they're
it's
like
all practical effects, right?
Practical effects. And there's probably like some injuries that these guys sustained.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, they're like, they have metal and leather and they're like fighting, like running through actual fire for these fight scenes. So, you know, maybe I should give them a pass, but I will say, like, if you watch something like Conan, the fighting, the sword scenes are like way better than what we see
here. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I will say to add on to the setbacks, there's some repetition in the plot. Like, the plot was just not very well thought out. It's rather thin, I guess you could say. We see Dar sneak back into Mayax's, which would have been King Zed's palace, but Mayax has taken over. He has to sneak back in that place like three or four times to rescue different friends, rescue the girl again and again. Like, it's just like, okay, we've done this.
Yeah.
Can we find something else to do? So that's really annoying. And there's a big letdown at the end. The whole plot makes you hate Mayax.
Yeah.
And Mayax was the guy who stole Dar from his mother's womb, put him in a cowl to begin with, and wanted to sacrifice him. So the whole plot is pointing to, like, we got to get rid of Mayax. He's the bad guy.
Right.
But then at the end, we do away with Mayax. We lose poor, I think, Poto the ferret. Like,
yeah.
And you're kind of like, okay, this is the this is where we should naturally wrap up the story. Right. But we got to spend another 20 minutes fighting the Huns. I think I called them the Juns or the Duns earlier.
Yeah,
so but this is actually the Huns.
Right.
So you think I could remember that because maybe Attila was part of these Huns? I don't know. Anyhow, they come back and,
yeah,
and all of Dar's people are going to be decimated by the Huns until the Bat people come in and help save us. Yeah. But it was like, wait a minute. I thought we were done. Like, Mayax was the main bad guy that we cared about.
Yeah.
We've already killed him off. And so then we, you know, there's this like additional fight scene.
Yeah. There's this Hun warrior that you see right before they slaughter Mark Singer's Dar.
Right.
Before they kill his whole village. So they kind of connect and I think and say, all right, I know you, you know me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that's going to come back later in the movie. But it seems like he's like a mini boss.
We got away from that.
Yeah. It seems like he's a mini boss. Like we should have defeated him earlier.
First, yeah.
And then take out Mayax.
Yeah.
Because like you said, the whole movie, you're kind of building up this hatred for Mayax.
Right.
And really this one dude, you only hate him because he killed Dar's father and his village.
And his dog. Don't forget his dog.
And his dog. Which normally that's enough. You're like, all right, right, I hate you. You killed everybody I know and
exactly.
my dad.
It's enough for Keanu Reeves, right? Just the dog.
Right. But, you know, you've invested so much time in saying, all right, Mayax is really awful. We really hate this guy.
Yeah, he's terrible. He's sacrificing children.
And, like, to your point, like, we kill him, and it's like, oh, wait, we still have another fight to fight?
Yeah.
What is this all about?
I still want to argue that I think, I got to bring this back to classic literature. I think he's trying to borrow from The Hobbit and just miss the mark here. Because we do the same thing in The Hobbit, right? Like,
uh-huh.
There's this whole buildup. We got to get rid of Smaug. Smaug is horrible. But then we still have the giant battle at the end with all the extra armies.
Yeah.
But it works in The Hobbit, and here it gets a little muddy. Like, I think we lost our way a little
yeah.
bit. So
I wonder.
That's my opinion.
It could be. You know, I know the director is a big literary fan.
Okay.
So when you watch Phantasm, he borrowed a lot from Dune.
Oh.
Maybe he's a Tolkien fan.
Yeah. You yeah. know. Sounds like he's a sci-fi fantasy guy anyhow.
Yeah.
So maybe so.
So yeah, I agree with you there on some of the setbacks. The just there is a Me Too movement moment in this film too, which is a little
yeah.
cringy in 2022. So the Beastmaster has his black tiger and he uses this to his advantage to
of
scare
course.
Tanya Roberts into his arms, you know, like,
yeah.
and they do this fake out moment where, you know, hey, like, I will save you from this beast.
Yeah, he's pretending like he don't know that tiger.
Right.
He's like, oh, that's a scary tiger. Let me rescue you.
And it's kind of unbecoming, you know, he chases off the tiger and he's like, oh, you can repay me now. And like, does a force kiss on her.
Yeah, yeah.
And they go back and forth and it kind of goes from being that to like serious, like she starts talking about her people and she's a slave
right.
girl and they plant the seeds of like, all right, these two are going to start caring for each other in the movie.
Right.
But, you know, I just hate that that's there, that first few moments of their relationship, because it's just like unbecoming of our hero to treat a girl like that.
Right.
Trick her.
Exactly.
You know, I will say, though, we watched Jungle Cruise recently. The Rock does something almost exactly the same way. He's got this tiger that's his buddy.
Oh.
And he tricks Emily Blunt's character into trusting him to be this amazing captain.
Right.
By doing the same type of thing where he like chases off the tiger and, you know, fools everybody into thinking that he's just, you know, that macho.
Yeah.
When really this is his buddy and it was a gag. But he doesn't force himself on her, kiss her, that kind of thing.
Right, right. Didn't take it quite that far.
He didn't go that far. He just did it for like, you know, machismo, look at me type
right.
points.
That's a little more tolerable than like, and now you will make out with me because I saved your life.
Yeah, like yeah. quid pro quo stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's not okay.
No, and you and I, we like our heroes to be more admirable.
Yes, for sure.
Right? I mean, you know, you want them
to have some virtue.
Yeah, win the girl without being slimy.
Exactly. Yeah, don't leave a slime trail behind
yeah.
you.
So we went through our standouts and setbacks, but let's go ahead and hit some of our cast members, too, that we haven't already talked about.
Okay.
Mark Singer plays Dar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he goes on, we didn't mention this before, but he plays the Beastmaster again in Beastmaster 2 and 3.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually a TV series they did for 2 seasons for the Beastmaster.
I need to go back and watch some of that. I can't remember if I've seen any of the subsequent stuff.
I doubt you've seen the movies. Because
okay.
I've looked up a little bit about them, and they're like are pretty poor, like big drop-offs from this film.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then the TV show, I think we may have seen.
Okay.
It's free right now on Tubi TV. I thought maybe we could watch an episode or two for fun.
We'll check it out.
Yeah.
For science.
For science. But Mark Singer, you know, he's definitely this oiled up muscle man, you know, great physique.
Yeah.
He plays the part great, you know, as far as like looking the part.
Yeah, he looks the part.
Acting wise, like, I guess he just gets the job done.
Sure,
right?
Sure. It's fine. For the budget of this film, it's acceptable.
Yeah, it's acceptable. Tanya Roberts plays Kiri.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, she goes on to play a Bond girl later.
Exactly. So she's
gorgeous. And one thing I wanted to mention about Tanya, because Mark Singer, I did watch a few interviews and stuff on YouTube. Mark Singer says this about her, mm-hmm. but it was cool. Like Ted Wass, who is her co-lead in Sheena.
Mm-hmm.
They both said the same thing about her, that she is the most physical actress they've ever worked with.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she wasn't just some like pretty model just running around in the woods and stuff. Like,
yeah.
She was like legit athletic.
Stunts. Okay.
I thought that was cool.
That is cool.
You know, it spoke some good things about her that way.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it makes sense why she becomes a Bond girl. I'm sure. I haven't seen her. Which one is she in? Which James Bond?
A View to a Kill.
Okay.
But in that one, she's kind of more prissy. She's not really like a fighter in that movie.
Okay.
But
I will say she has a very, she's obviously a very attractive woman, but she has a very changeable look because she's a redhead in Beastmaster and then she's blonde, right?
In
Sheena. And she looks almost like a completely different person.
She does.
Beautiful with both hair colors, but yeah. I was like, oh wow, she doesn't even look like the same person here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I prefer as a red. There's something about her like a little spicier.
Yeah, she looks. It's a little more striking for her to be a redhead. I don't know what her natural hair color is. I guess we could look that up.
And her eyes are great, too. Like these big, kind of like...
light colored.
Mesmerizing eyes.
Yeah, kind of lasery looking eyes.
Yeah. But yeah, she does fine. She's mostly damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm.
She does have a few moments where
her
she takes out a baddie.
Flat. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot for her to do in this film.
Not really. Look pretty. And she does a good job of that.
Yeah. We mentioned Rip Torn already in our standouts. John Amos plays Seth. So he and this little kid, Josh Milrad, and I'd say little kid. He's like a preteen, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see a lot of their butt cheeks, you know, these outfits that they wear.
They're loincloths, basically.
Yeah. You know, they're fine. I think they're fun.
Yeah,
you know?
A little bit of comic relief.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a fun dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah. And I remember him as the dad in, what was the show with JJ Dynamite?
Oh, Good Times?
Good Times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
the dad in that. Which,
yeah.
So it's just kind of funny seeing, you know, this guy that plays like, I don't know, like low income urban guy
right.
now as this loincloth with a stick.
Yeah, exactly. Tribal kind of guy, but like prehistoric tribal kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've always loved John Amos's face. I don't know, he just looks like a kind soul. I know nothing about him as a human being, like in real life, but I just have always adored his face. Like he just looks like a friendly guy to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's also in Coming to America.
Oh, right.
He's got McDowell's, remember?
Yes, like, yeah.
They're McDonald's, we're McDowell's.
Don't they wear like kilts or plaid or something in McDowell's?
Yeah, they do, they do.
That's funny.
That's funny. He says, they have the golden arches. We have the golden arcs.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does have that face. Like if we were in a crisis situation.
You'd look at that guy and be like, I feel like I can trust him.
Yeah, like tell us what to do, John Amos.
So, yeah, yeah. And he's a strapping human, so that helps too.
And then, yeah, King Zed, he doesn't have a whole lot to do here. It is kind of a sad moment.
It is sad.
When, you know, his son, he doesn't know it that this is his long-lost son. But
right.
Dar, he basically, Zed calls him out as being a freak.
Yeah.
And kicks him out of the community.
Yeah, wants no help.
Before the final battle.
Right.
He doesn't want this help. And it's
crazy.
Just, you know, you feel so bad for for Dar, because he kind of goes off alone with his animals.
Well, he was stolen from his mother's womb, had to come out of a cow's womb, you know, almost sacrificed as a child, gets an adopted dad who raises him and clearly loves him, sees that guy get killed by these marauding peoples.
Yeah.
Finally realizes, like, I was actually a prince. I was the son of this king. And the king is like,
and I've saved him. I saved this guy.
I've rescued my biological father. And he wants nothing to do with me.
Literally
it's
calls
a big
him
letdown.
A freak and casts them out of their town.
Yeah, it's like, be gone with you. That's
was sad. but yeah, you know, there's a lot of big hulking guys in this movie.
Sure.
A lot of muscles.
Yeah,
like muscles. If you like to see some oiled up bodies, there's a lot of that.
There's that. I still enjoy the animals the most, but...
Well, I think that, you know, they, like we said earlier, they can really steal the show. I think that's what
sets that's us why apart. You watch this movie. It's especially, you know, if you watched it as a kid first, you're like, cool, this guy can talk to animals.
Yeah.
I want to talk to animals.
Well, what did I tell you the other day when we went on our walk? Like, if I could have three superpowers...
That's right.
Can you remember what my three superpowers...
Oh, here we go. Flight is always one of your superpowers.
That's my second one.
Okay.
I would like the gift of flight. Just...
Yes.
I like to travel and, you know,
time
I don't
travel
like airports.
Is your number one. You want to time travel.
I do.
Yes.
That's my number one.
So the third one is you want to know what animals are thinking.
I would like to hear what the thoughts are of animals.
Yeah. Which would be, I think, hilarious.
Yes.
Because do animals have thoughts?
I think they do, but they're like primitive thoughts, like... Give me some food.
You know, and I think there's this guy on Instagram, and I can't tell you what his handle is because it's like IH8X Rockstar. I don't know. You'll have to try and find him on Instagram, but he's hilarious. He takes other people's silly animal videos and then does his own voiceover work. So it's like the animals are talking and whatever's happening. And I find it hilarious, which maybe makes me like one step above like crazy cat video people. I don't know. But I do think it's funny because it's like that. It's like you're, you know, you're pretending to understand what these animals are thinking.
Yeah.
That'd be a cool superpower.
I would love that. And you may say, well, why don't you want to hear what humans have to say?
No, I don't want to know what's in the mind of every human. That sounds like a hot mess to me.
I think it's just too much.
That's a dumpster fire.
Too much negativity. I mean, they say guys think about sex like every minute or something like that.
Is that what really it is? Every 60 seconds?
If that's really true.
Well,
like,
then you don't need to read the thoughts of other people. You know what 50% of the population is thinking about already.
Yeah.
Of course, it might be true in the animal kingdom too, though.
That's true.
Who knows? Who knows?
So what about you, though? Do you have any superpowers you wish you could have?
Invisibility is always the top of my list. If I could just like disappear into the background and then I, you know, I'm a five on the Enneagram. I love to observe and just kind of take in what's happening around me. So if I could be invisible, I could just kind of hang back. No one has to know I'm there. And I could just watch what's happening, see what's going down.
That'd
psychoanalyze whatever's going on, you know, not that I have any knowledge about psychoanalyzation, but.
We're pop psychologists, though, really.
Of course. Of course.
All right. I think that about does it. I think this is now the time in which we say yay or nay. So what say ye, Kim?
Well, as I often do, if it is a film that I enjoyed as a child, I have nostalgic connections to it, it's a yay for me. And I say yay to this because it's a family watch. It's just kind of fun to think about being able to read animals' thoughts or having animal friends that you can really communicate with. It's cheesy, it's low budget, but it's just a fun hang. So it's a yay for me and the Beastmaster.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'm the same way. There obviously there's this tie to the past, the feelings that you had when you watched it. It seems so big and epic. Back in the day, now when you watch it, you realize, okay, well, this is a low-budget fantasy film from the 80s.
Right.
So, you know, is
it... You're not watching it to see if it's going to get an Oscar, right?
Right.
Like, that's not what you're doing.
It's not Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, you know, so it doesn't... But it doesn't have that budget, and it doesn't have that quality of cast and that length of time they spent filming
it. Exactly.
And all that other stuff. So for what it is, I really do enjoy it. You know, when I think of all of these ripoff films that happened after this movie and Conan, there are so many awful sword and sandal films.
Right.
And I just wonder, maybe it is the animals thing that you're talking about, because there's a lot of these films where you have these oiled up bodybuilders out there fighting in some desert wasteland.
Yeah.
And they're almost all just terrible, terrible movies.
Yeah, sword, sandals, and sorcery, right?
Yeah. And you're like, why is this one good? And maybe it is the animals.
We just like animals.
Yeah, maybe we like animals. That's
I mean, look around. We've got a few around this place.
All right. Well, we did have a couple comments about this on our Instagram. Ranger Cosplay, a good buddy of ours, says, love Beastmaster. When I was younger, some family members who had cable taped some movies for us to watch, since we only had an antenna. Beastmaster was one of them. I must have watched it dozens and dozens of times. I always loved the ferrets. Vinegar Syndrome put out a deluxe 4K version with tons of special features and packaging. It is a beautiful set. So if you don't know Ranger Cosplay, he's like MovieMan76, I think is his handle.
Yeah, on Instagram. That sounds right.
He's got a ton of physical media. He's very big into that. So yeah, I mean, he's the guy to listen to on that. So if you're a fan of this film, check out the Vinegar Syndrome Deluxe 4K version.
Okay.
Then we also posted, tell us what you like about Beastmaster.
Right.
Bebop Jones said everything, LOL.
Okay.
So she's a fan. And then Office of Pop Culture said, Tanya Roberts. You've probably heard that a lot. So he's a fan of Tanya.
Yep, I'm sure a lot of people are.
And speaking of Tanya, of course, she was on that 70s show.
Oh, yes. She, don't tell me, Donna's mom.
Donna's mom.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell us what we're going to watch next week.
Okay, so next week we are leaving the 1980s and we're going back. We're going way back to 1963. With a Vincent Price Diary of a Madman.
Ooh.
Yep. So IMDb tells us an evil spirit leaves the body of his human host, a criminal on death row, and sneaks into the body of his next human host, a French magistrate, which of course is Vincent Price's character. Yeah. So this one, I looked up the ratings and it's just called Approved. So I know we've watched this one with at least one of our children, maybe the 14-year-old. So
yeah,
I think you can watch it with your older kids. It's not too creepy. It's not terribly gory. I mean, it's 1963 Vincent Price. Yeah. So
it should be fun to watch with the family. It is right now on Amazon Prime.
Oh, good.
So if you're a Prime viewer, then you can watch this movie for free.
Yep. There you go.
So that does it for us this week, guys.
All right, guys, enjoy your movies.
Take care. Peace out.
Peace out.